Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 95-year-old Jake Jacobson of Shaver Lake, California. He grew up in a raisin vineyard in Selma, California, but it was a vineyard in France where his life almost came to an end on December 30th, 1944. If that had been the case, he never would have experienced 66 years of marriage to his sweetheart, Joe. He never would have enjoyed the accomplishments of his four children, not to mention seven grandchildren and now 10 great-grandchildren. You heard him explain how determined he was to serve in the Army in World War II, declining a deferment and hiding his history of asthma. Jake would eventually become part of the legendary 3rd Infantry Division.
I was in the infantry, but we were special jobs in the infantry. We were radio operators, code messengers, and all different kinds, truck drivers, reconnaissance and everything. And so they didn't need us as infantry at that time, so they shipped us to England, and we stayed in England for 2 months training. And then it was just about when the Battle of the Bulge was beginning, and so all of a sudden they needed all kinds of infantry, registered infantry. So we all got our spec number changed and went into the infantry. And so we trained for a couple of months there and got to know each other real good, and went, and most of us went to the 3rd Division. They were always trying to fill out that up with at that time. And that's one thing that the Army needs to do, is keep better contact. Tell the soldiers what's going on. We knew the Battle of Bulge was going on, but we didn't know that all the replacements was going over there because they were in dire circumstance. And so we weren't getting any, and we were going down from a full company of 200-plus men down to, by the time I got hit, we were down, could only get 14 men out of I Company to attack that night. So they had to get 10 from K and 10 from L and 10 from anti-tankers and everything. And we were going to go on the attack, because even if they were going to shoot us, we didn't care anymore, because we thought we were going to lose our lives there. So we said, you know, we're not going to go attack, even if they shoot us. But we ended up, they pulled 3 tanks in on us and got 10 guys from all the rest of the companies and went on attack that night. And so they need to say what's going on. You know, we can't give you any men, because there isn't any to get, you know.
I know there's a lot of veterans identifying with you there. Just to follow up on what you shared, the 2 months you spent training in England, so at that point, you didn't think you were going to be in a regular rifle platoon or reconnaissance platoon?
We thought it was going to be more in a special place, which is dangerous, but not like combat infantry.
What did you think you were going to be doing?
They put me in the radio, but I can't memorize things. And so they said, you know, so they pulled me out of there and put me in the message center, which is wearing a decoding machine that codes messages and interprets them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I thought I'd probably end up, you know. And another thing that made it bad in this Benware was, this is a little part of France that hadn't been taken yet, and they were determined that they were going to keep it for spring when they could invade, still thinking they could invade. And so they filled it with SS troops, which are entirely different troop than a regular army. We were on the move. It was after they'd got into southern France and got the breakthrough going through there. And so in one day, we walked 30 miles. The Germans were pulling out right ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the French were lining the streets with all their liquor, I mean, feeding to the Americans for taking it. And so we marched 30 miles. The company commander got drunk, and he was decided we were going to go on and push up and take the next town. And he'd found out that there was a German SP gun, which is an anti-tank gun, up ahead. But we'd walked 30 miles, so he said, well, are you going to put you on tanks and take you on up there? So we loaded on 5 tanks and started up into the next village, and I was on the 3rd tank. They drove up there, and they got into the range of that anti-tank gun, and it knocked out the front tank. The second tank jabbed it in reverse and started backing up, and he started backing over my tank. So we jumped off, and our platoon sergeant, the one that was taking care of me, he says, take off and go back to the next town we're through and go into the houses. So we went back there and got into the houses, and he says, company commander's drunk. We're not going to follow him. He says, go in there and stay quiet. Just go in there and don't do anything. And even if they call I Company to come out, don't come out. And so he said it. I did it. And so the rest of the guys did too. So we went into the houses, burst the I Company, all fall out. And so we didn't fall out. So we didn't fall out till the next morning. We came out, where's I Company? It's cut off the road someplace in the next town or more. So we walked up there and never heard a word about where were we, what were we doing, anything else. But one of the things you do on your own when you figure that it's suicide.
Yeah, I was going to say, that probably saved your life.
Yeah.
And so this is December 1944.
Yeah.
In France. What was the weather like?
It was just before the night I got hit, it snowed. It was real cold up there. It's Vault Siege Mountains, and so the ground was frozen solid, and you couldn't even dig foxholes. Your hands would cramp up from trying to bed through it. You'd have to find where a shell had landed. But the night I got hit, it snowed. It snowed from there.
And I need to hear the story about the night you got hit, but I'm sure there are a few things leading up to it, because you got hit less than a week after Christmas, and I believe you guys were in Benwir, a place you would later get to go back decades later and see the village that you guys had liberated. What was happening in Benwir on Christmas Eve of 1944?
Christmas Eve. Well, first of all, we were running patrols. We couldn't be outside in daytime. If there's one or two soldiers out there, Germans would put 88 in there on us, try to knock us out. And so all of our, because we didn't have any men, we'd go out every night, almost on a night patrol. And earlier Christmas Day, they'd tell them, you guys are going to get your Christmas dinner tonight. Promised it, but we didn't get it. And then this is a week later almost. They says, you guys are lucky, you're going to get your Christmas dinner, turkey, and all the trimmings, you know. Right after they told us that we were getting it, at this is, you're going on another patrol tonight. And we just, the night before, almost gotten a bunch of guys killed and captured. And we thought, oh no, you know. So we lost our appetite for for Christmas dinner.
Well, if you're going to say that, I have to ask you what happened. If you said you almost got a bunch of guys killed and captured, that sounds like a pretty memorable patrol. What can you tell me about that?
Well, like I say, you know, a bunch of guys, all of us 19, we liberated a German PX and all got army, alles für Deutschland, on the blade. And when I went back to rest camp, I got to send them to all the guys first in our squad that got one. And so, you know, it was a time of fear and trembling, but yet you could still survive in it. You learn to live in it.
You know, for instance, that patrol that you're talking about, what was the objective of your patrol? You're trying to find out where some Germans are?
Well, the patrol was mostly to capture prisoners, to find out what the Germans were up to and what they, you'd get in firefights. And firefights is at night, so you couldn't see individuals to shoot at. You just lay down a base of fire so they couldn't raise their head up. You don't know who or what you hit, but you learn to do it, yeah.
Well, and I imagine you also don't know where they're going to be firing at you from.
No.
That sounds a little scary, a little nerve-wracking, a little alarming.
You know, if the bullet's got your number on it, it'll get you. I mean, you get that fatal attitude that you either get hit or not get hit. So it's different, you know.
So you were resigned to it and not afraid?
You're afraid. You're scared. You reach a point that you don't figure you'll come out of it alive.
And you'd probably seen some guys who weren't coming out of it alive.
Yeah, well, it's one, the day I came into Benwir, because our company had been annihilated, they put K Company to take the town instead of us. So they put us on outpost duty. We had up above, and was moved into one of their streets in one of their places there, and sitting, and we could hear the fighting, and pretty soon sounded like a German tank coming down the road towards us. So we watched and see, you know, if that was a German tank, and sure enough, here around the corner came this German tank, and we thought, oh man, we're in trouble, you know, because one shot could kill a bunch of us. And then behind it was one GI with an M1 rifle chasing this tank. Someone had jammed the turret of the tank on the road up ahead, farther from us, and he was chasing the tank down the road towards us. It went right by us. Every time a German would pop up its head out of the turret, he'd take a shot at it. And so the guy ducked down, and they just kept chasing the tank on the road past us, and our anti-tank gun down the road a little bit, and it knocked it out.
That's something you don't get to see every day.
No.
So you
I'm
went
thankful.
Yeah. And it sounds like emotionally you went from being very fearful to almost entertained by that.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned, you've said a couple times, you know, the losses that your company absorbed. And I know these things aren't easy to talk about, but this is one of the reasons we do this program, to help us understand, those who haven't been in combat, who didn't live through this, the price that's paid for our freedom. And I'm sure some of those guys who were killed and wounded were guys that you'd gotten to know a little bit.
Yeah.
How hard was that for you as a 19-year-old to process what you were seeing and experiencing as guys just like you were giving their lives?
One of my friends, Goodwin England, he got sent to the 3rd Division the same as I did. And on his way in the Jeep, on up to the front, his Jeep hit a mine and he was killed. And he never did, you know, make it. You know, he learned to accept it. Like another time, this other friend of mine, we were told, him and I, to take, go up to the, contact the company in the next town. And so we started up this road from Benware and up to Singwishide. All of a sudden, a sniper started shooting at us. And a bullet that's being shot at you cracks as it goes by you. You can tell it's a, he's trying to knock you out. He was just walking along. I says, "Neil," I says, "let's get out of here. We're, you know," and he didn't, his hearing wasn't very good, so he didn't know the difference. So we ran out of there, and he didn't hit either one of us, but you could tell that we were zeroed in, and some of the things that you experience.
I'm sure growing up, Christmas was probably a pretty big deal for you.
Right.
How memorable was Christmas 1944? How often do you think about it with all the Christmases that have come since?
I do, especially around Christmas time, I think of it.
What was it like to be a 19-year-old out freezing your tail off, half a world away from your family, and realizing, hey, it's Christmas?
Yeah, it was different, let's put it that way. But you just accepted it, you know, you programming it in. Okay, I'm here, and I'm either going to make it out or I'm not going to make it out. But let me say one thing. You know, I had enough of the Bible to know that you don't make promises to the Lord that you're not intended or won't keep. And so I knew enough in the middle of Benware, sitting in a foxhole, to not promise God I'll serve him unquittably for the rest of my life. But I did reach the place. I said, "Lord, if you get me out of here alive, I'll never complain about anything again." I tried to keep that.
That's for more than 76 years you've been keeping that. I can see how much that means to you, and I think everyone can hear the sincerity in your voice, and if they could see your eyes right now, they'd really understand. That's powerful.
I knew my mom and dad would be praying for me like crazy. It was hard on them because I was the only boy. And my dad was 50 when he got married. My mom was 35. So one generation was gone. So I knew that they were really worried. And yet another thing that's interesting, you know, being a good Baptist like I was, and a couple of guys back at the Baptist church were kind of different. This one, after I got wounded and went to the hospital for over 3 months, why came back and joined an NPF. They put me in MP, put me in limited duty. They were stationed in Paris, of all places. So I went to Paris and went to the Folies Bergère, of all things. Press was outside, and it says, "Take." So they took me and a couple other guys and said, "We're going to take you in Folies Bergère." And so we went in there and took us backstage and put us on the lap of a couple of the gals and took pictures. And it's going to be the Life magazine, for Life magazine. And I thought, oh, man, what's the people of the church are going to say? But it never got published. I mean, never made the press. But
did you ever see the pictures?
No, I never saw the picture or anything, you know.
Well, maybe they're still out there somewhere. There is definitely more to Jake Jacobson's story, but it's time for our final break. You know, 4 decades after World War II, Jake and some of his fellow veterans returned to Benware, France, to honor those who did not come home. and to see firsthand what their shared sacrifice had produced for the people there. But we still need to hear the rest of what happened there. We're going to take you back to December 30th, 1944, and catch the rest of that story behind his purple heart when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.